Dave Wunstead hanging out with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to have Coach Wunstead with us. And a sincere hola, Dave, for our second segment. I wonder, as you look at this situation, this game, and, you know, kind of turning your focus, obviously you lost three offensive linemen in the game. You got to a point where I believe Caleb Williams was under pressure 56% of the time.
51%. 51. More than half.
More than half.
Yes.
Is that right?
2.4 seconds before pressure came to him. And you just didn't have time to do a lot, given all the offensive line issues.
Yep.
Do you think Nick Davis is back in the starting lineup? He's been on the pay no mind list. He hasn't been on the active roster for 2 weeks.
he would be up if we had nobody else. If everybody was hurt, then you bring him up and you play him. Yeah, absolutely. And crazy things happen. He's got enough ability. Yeah. You probably get a good game or two out of him. Maybe, you know.
So, Dave, you were a defensive minded head coach,
right?
If you were on the sidelines and you were facing third and goal from the one, and your offensive coordinator said in your head, "said let's hand the ball to the backup left guard or offensive guard or
center,
the mini fridge." If you had your version of the mini fridge, would you unplug it at that point and say, "Okay, I'm vetoing this call"? How do you explain what happened?
This is a pet peeve with me, how games can happen, including the team they were playing, Dan Quinn, in the Super Bowl against New England, whatever that was, down 28 points, and at the end of the game, if he takes a knee and kicks a field goal, they go up by 10, and they win a Super Bowl.
Oh, God.
And he lets his offensive coordinator drop back twice. He gets sacked once and fumbles once. And they don't. And that coach, I still can't get over that. The way I was brought up is the head coach, if you're not calling the plays or if you're calling the plays, it doesn't matter. You are in control of the flow of the game. Your offensive coaches, and I've said this before, guys, when you hire an offensive coach, I say, "Mully, your job is to put the ball in the end zone. All you should be thinking of is scoring. David, you're my defense coordinator. All you're thinking of is keep them out. If that means 1,000 blitzes, that's what you come up with. Mully, if you want to throw, I mean, whatever your plan is, now as a head coach, I've got control of the whole flow of the game. So now we get into it. We got a lead. David's my defensive coordinator. And I say, you know what, David? Let's not pressure him anymore. Let's play coverage. I don't know what coverage is best, David. That's your job. But let's play zone. Or Mully, I don't want to throw it. You know how many times?
Run.
Guys, you know how many times with Ricky Williams, going back to here at the Bears, that I would tell my offensive coordinator, with LeSean McCoy, I would say, go into the wild. I don't want the quarterback throwing the ball anymore.
Yeah.
I don't trust him. Nobody gets the ball except LeSean McCoy.
Okay, Woody Hayes.
That's fine, Coach. We upset the number one team in the country. We beat West Virginia.
I hear you.
So my point is,
don't get bored. That's your line.
Don't get bored.
That I think about all the time. And Patrick Manley said that he felt that call was a bye week call. That's the kind of thing you're on the bye week. You're doing it. Eureka.
Oh, yeah.
You may have had it in for 3 weeks, but you're waiting to get to it, and you're in the bye week. You're bored. You're bored.
No question. But they've been working that for a few weeks, so I'm going to give them that, Molly. I'm going to say they didn't install it, last week.
No, they didn't, Eureka did.
This is an example of where Flus, you got to just call a timeout. I wouldn't even be able to think straight. I would say to my offensive coordinator, "Are you effing kidding me? Are you serious? Tell me you're serious, Mully, that this is what you want to call. Tell me you're serious."
This segment with Dave,
because I'd have to know that.
I burn a timeout to have the guy explain his idea to you.
I would, I would want to know if you misread it. Did you forget your glasses? What the hell are we talking about?
I thought it was the craziest play I've seen.
It was the craziest play. It was. There's no excuse for it. This segment of Dave Wannstedt is sponsored by ChicagoRoofingContractors.org, providing all-weather protection for your business. Unfortunately, Dave, this is not the first time that we've had a Shane Waldron call go like this.
On
be
the
very
goal
strange
line.
On the goal line. If you're the head coach, we talk about repercussions for Tyreek Stevenson and players who do things that make you say, what about the offensive coordinator? What about the play caller? Do you consider other options after the second game this year where you could point to as being a call that changed the complexion of that game?
No, I'm going to bring it back to Flus. And, you know, I'm a Flus supporter, and I'm going to all the way. But Flus, no, it's on him. It's not – the offensive coordinator can think whatever he wants. But you got to say right there, Roshan, or I don't care who it is, the Swift, you know, I'm gonna run power. I want to run lead. I want to run the belly. Whatever it is, run the ball. I mean, it's almost too.
There was another play, Dave, that really upset me, and it was down by the goal line. They were in the red zone, and it's a 3rd and 5. And you run your quarterback on an option. You got 2 yards.
I saw that.
He got crushed
twice
on that play.
They ran him twice like a quarterback draw, right?
And then on 4th and 3, they got the interference, and they got the ball down to the goal line, and then they had a conventional touchdown to tie the game. But I would want to know, and I get it, the offensive line's beaten up, but a quarterback draw? Why get the guy hit? Why get the guy especially, hit in the middle of the field?
Especially where you were on the field.
Yeah.
Yes. In the red zone.
I agree with you guys. I mean, that's a call there where you're just trying to not turn the ball over, you know? And I mean, that was my thinking there. It's not because Caleb is a good runner, but it's not Justin Fields, you know, that you're running it with. And I don't know, that defensive line, with your line, like you say, Molly. Yeah, it's not Jaden Daniels. I mean, you're not thinking that we're going to all of a sudden blow guys off the ball on that play, you know? I don't know. I'm sure there was some thinking behind it, but I that kind of caught me off guard too, because hasn't been part of their.
Right. Now they ended up, you know, despite this play at the goal line that we're talking about, the turnover, they had a stop. They got the ball back despite the 3rd and 5 call. They end up with a touchdown with 30 seconds left. And that is like a glorious come from behind.
Yes.
It's Caleb Williams doing the special and meeting the moment that you talked about. And then you somehow blow the game on
exhaled.
A Hail Mary. How do you defend a Hail Mary? What would you do just on that play in particular? What is the sequencing? Did you practice it much?
And Flus, I promise you guys this.
Yeah.
They've been running, you know.
Hundreds of times.
Hundreds of times. And I would agree with him on that. No, I agree with him on that. The number one thing when we would do it, I would say, guys, we got to make the quarterback throw the ball on time. Okay, and so I used to rush 3, but here's what I would do with the linebacker. You got the back, because the one that always concerned me was the quarterback getting outside the pocket.
Yes.
And what a lot of teams would do, they would bring that back up and they would double team your end rusher. So now the quarterback can roll outside. So I would go man with the linebacker. So I would have Edmonds and say, you got that back. The minute that he blocks, you're our 4th rusher. So we got 4 guys coming. So if he goes and pins our end, he's coming off the corner 90 miles an hour. If he steps up and blocks, you're coming inside out right now. And so we had 4, but it was the backer, just like Edmonds. They said he was spying. I don't know what his responsibility was.
He was supposed to be on Eckler, the running back.
Yeah, well, you are, until he blocks.
Yeah.
Minute he steps up, you're coming 90 miles an hour, and you're coming to him on the snap. And then the second thing is, we always played up on the guys inside. Now, if we were going to, there's 2 different plays. If you're protecting against a quick out for the field goal, you're going to play outside technique. And we had a different word for that. Everybody lined up outside. We had three deep guys, but everybody was – so the guy couldn't get outside. He was going to run.
There were 2 seconds left, so there was there's no way they could get a field goal
way.
Out of that.
No way they could get a field goal. That's why I want to go back to the play before the Hail Mary.
Right.
Help us understand why Matt Eberflus stubbornly insists that he would not have done anything any differently because, Dave, the ball was at the 35, and you can't tell me that those 13 yards didn't matter and it didn't help them execute successfully a Hail Mary because if you take them back and you don't complete that pass, the ball doesn't make it into the end zone.
Right. No, I think hindsight Flus would probably say, you know what, yeah, we should have protected the boundary, and they have calls for that. You know, whether it's man outside technique, a lot of teams play zone. They play, David, like two guys in the flat, two guys behind them, three guys in the middle. So there's a couple of different concepts you can do with it to keep the guys from getting out of bounds. That's the key there. I'm sure that he would come back and say, you know what, we should have done that.
He didn't, though.
Yeah.
He doubled down on it, Dave. As a head coach, when do you know enough's enough? You got to come off and stop being so stubborn.
Yeah.
It's killing his reputation, yeah. And that may not matter, but his credibility is shot because of it.
Yeah.
How would you handle on a
well, on the jump ball then? So yes. So we were, whether it was regards, we were always up on the guys. Okay, and I don't want to make comparisons here. I know Cowher talked about it in Belichick. Everyone's got a little different, but we were always up on the guys because I wanted them to be in position like a basketball player. Okay.
Yes.
That was the thinking.
Yes.
But if they were gonna try the field goal, now we would jump outside you rather than inside. That way you couldn't get out. Okay. But then when we were going down, and we used to laugh about it, I remember telling Darnell Wolford here at the Bears, Woody, this is your guy. If he runs up in the stands and gets some popcorn, guess what? You're going in the stands and getting popcorn with him, okay? I don't care where he goes.
Eat his popcorn.
You know what I mean? So we would have guys, my point is, we would have guys running with him, and then you got your three safeties that are as deep as the deepest, and they're the guys that yell, ball, ball, ball. Because if I'm running and I'm covering you, Molly, all I'm focused on is on your inside hip. I'm staring at you. And now the guys behind it, the safeties that are watching, ball, 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 that tells me it's in the air.
Yes.
So now I'm getting in the basketball position, like Flew said, and then you got your safeties as deep as the deepest coming up over the top, and they're everybody's trying to bat it down. But
see, that's the thing. Stevenson was supposed to be on 85.
So do you
his
think
back
that,
is turned do, to the line?
Do you think that
affected
his ability to do his job successfully?
Of course it did.
Yeah, he was coming from the sideline to be the deep guy, and then he runs up in the front. I would love to sit down and talk to
tipped
the kid.
Tipped it in the air.
Yeah. Yeah. And just,
like a volleyball. Like he was setting up for a spike.
And cuts in front of some of his teammates to do that.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
I mean, it.
That's where the undisciplined part of being an undisciplined player hurts you.
Absolutely, 100%. And like I say, it's Miami kid, and I try to protect him. I want to protect him. I want him to be great. But there's a paper trail there. There's a paper trail with personal fouls and pass interference things. And and this is where it ends up, unfortunately. But it's
when you think back at tough losses in your coaching career, how often does one catastrophic loss, the way this feels to the Bears and their fans, lead to two, define a season? How do you prevent that from happening?
By dealing with it all either yesterday, which I guess we didn't, or today. You do not come in. I would overkill the Arizona hype, okay, in the locker room and with the players, and I would have this dealt with ASAP so you can get on with it, because plus you're traveling, you know, you can't let, you can't, and the tough thing is, if they come back and win that game, twice here, I was 9-7, we missed the playoffs by a game, twice, and I look back and I say, there's that one darn game, that one darn play,
one missed tackle, that was the difference
or not of maybe getting in or maybe getting out. And
That's it, man. That one's got an asterisk next to it.
In the building,
right,
with the internal communication, how much do you want to hear from your general manager this week? How much do you think that Ryan Poles is involving himself or insinuating himself into those conversations? Because we talk a lot about culture. We talk a lot about a lot of things that are not just the head coach. Is Ryan Poles involved more this week than normal?
I think Ryan Poles would be involved no normal than what him and Flus are talking all the time. He's in the meetings. But I think that Ryan Poles can give the head coach a honest, because he wants him to be successful, obviously. He could give him an honest interpretation, an honest evaluation of the perception and what's going on out there. You know what I mean? Flus, you know, because sometimes you get in that bunker mentality as a head coach and you get blinders on and, you know, things, you're seeing it one way and you dig your feet in and maybe Ryan says, hey, you know, we got to deal with this today. You can't wait till tomorrow and have a team meeting. So I think Ryan would be good for him, being that he hired him, being that they're on the same page, being that Ryan wants him to be successful. I think he would be a great resource. You know, he's a smart guy. He gets it. I wouldn't want to hear from anybody else.
You raise the ire of many fans when you talk about a team's road record. For instance, Matt Eberflus is now 3-17. Now, you know, that means you're considering the first year where they were losing maybe on purpose. The second year where last year they didn't have the good enough team to win some games. But now here you are, and you're 0-3 on the road this year. The game in London doesn't count. That's a neutral site. But you look at the fact that they're going on the road, they're now an underdog, and you wonder, how do you win on the road? And a lot of it is little things. You know, I was trying to pay attention to whether they were going to jump off sides at all, because you would think that'd be a big coaching point when the crowd noise becomes involved. They had a couple of pre-snap penalties in the first quarter. They can't score in the first quarter again. I just wonder, all these little things adding up, why is it so difficult in the NFL? How do you teach a team to win, and how difficult will it be that for them in Arizona, especially if they can't get a grip on this?
Yeah, well, the noise in Arizona is, you know, Washington has a little different mentality, I think, the fans, you know.
No question. There'll be a lot of Bear fans traveling.
Yeah, there'll be Bear fans in Arizona. Arizona's not as good a team.
Yet to beat a team with a winning record on the road.
It's
crazy. The last home.
It's crazy.
And I don't know. You're not going to call plays differently. You're not going to do anything differently. You get ready to go play. The meetings are what they are. You're probably not doing anything different with the meetings. You know, I don't know. It's a little bit of a. Little bit of a mystery to me.
Well, Dave, you're going on the road. You're joining Mark Grody live at Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, Michigan for the Four Winds Football Forecast Monday.
Grody is
November
joining 11th. Dave.
Okay, that's right.
Throw me the ball, Mark.
The event is free to the public. Starts at 6:30, 7:30 Eastern. You'll be giving a midseason review and forecast of the rest of the season. You can get autographs and photos with the coach before the Monday night game, November 11th, Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, Michigan. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. It will be. Yes, absolutely. 100%. Looking forward to it.
The Bears have not won a road game on a Sunday since December 26, 2021.
Is that right? What the heck is that?
That's a crazy stat.
No, they're going to win this week. I mean, come on. Arizona's not. I know they win, but.
Oh, bite your tongue,
I'm telling
you.
Bears are going to win. Kyler Murray is no better than the kid they just faced. And guys, James Conner's a Pitt guy. They were when he battled cancer and with his leukemia at Pitt, the worry was he going to live?
My God.
Come on. He's a good player. I love him. He's a Pitt guy, but he's not Robinson. They're not the team that we just played.
You got the Bears winning this game.
I do.
Okay.
Because? Their defense?
Because they're a better team.
I have lost a lot of confidence in this coaching staff. I think a lot of people have. Dave, I don't look at Matt Eberflus as being a guy you trust right now. I think he's dealing with a credibility problem. I don't think he's handled the public portion of his job well at all this week. And I think in that locker room, which is more important than anything that we think, I think the players are starting to wonder publicly and privately if they can trust their guy.
Well, we got Tory Taylor, so I'm,
that's it.
I'm betting on him.
See? Dave knows
you guys are punters.
How good is he?
You know, that's your – hey, they got a quarterback.
Five times inside
pick.
The 10.
They got a Dunze, good pick.
Whatever it was.
The key to the team is the punter.
Coach, I love it. I love it. And our defense got to come some turn. Think about this, guys. The last four games before Washington, we got two turnovers a game, our defense.
I know.
It was average, and we got none.
Well, Montez Sweat went out at one point. Let's hope he's okay.
He better be okay. Well, yeah. We have not talked about that. No. That would be huge and if that, he can't play.
What was the injury? Calf?
It was a lower leg injury.
Lower leg injury. Yeah. We'll go hockey injury.
I think they called it a shin.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So I don't know. I mean, I've had shin injuries.
Yeah, it's we need him. We need him. Absolutely, we do.
All right. Thank you, Coach.
All right,
great stuff.
Coach. Good stuff, Dave.
Smully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What the hell are we talking about?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to The Score.
Dave was fired up.
Oh, it was great to talk to Dave.
Yeah, really good to talk, get the coach's perspective.
No question.
On a lot of different things, just how simple it could be to just own up to certain things that you regret. Yeah. In-game decisions, people would respect that. I don't think people respect holding your ground in a decision as short-sighted as the one not to defend the second to the last play differently.
Well, that's one. I think the handoff to Kramer.
That's another
one. I think the whole thing with Stevenson is another.
Okay.
Hey, don't tell
those
me.
Those are three strikes.
It's about development.
Those are three strikes.
It's not about development.
What's
it's about
development?
Discipline.
It's not about focus.
It's about...
And I hope this doesn't factor into the decision, and it shouldn't affect the judgment of what happens with Tyrique Stevenson, but Marvin Harrison Jr. caught six passes for 111 yards and a touchdown.
I know.
Last week.
He's pretty good.
So Jalen Johnson should be following him everywhere.
Sure.
Perhaps this is the week to do that. They don't travel typically.
Right.
But if you're going to make Tyrique Stevenson a healthy scratch, as I would suggest doing, as for reasons we've talked about,
then
maybe this is the week you start to say, all right, Jalen Johnson, you get on Marvin Harrison Jr. and you don't let him breathe.
That's a plan. I think whether anyone likes it or not, I think you almost have to do something along those lines. Like I was saying, at the very least, don't start him in the game. Have him come in later if indeed you feel like you can't get by without him. Now, they won a Carolina game without him when he was injured, so don't tell me you can't win a game without him.
That would be very flusy to me. I think it's kind of wishy-washy.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of like a in between. We're kind of sort of maybe mad,
you know,
but we're not mad enough to make you sit the entire game.
A guy I know texted me saying, you got to cut that kid. I think that's too harsh, but I think that the middle ground would be sit him for a game. You mentioned the Flower sitting Romeo Doubs for a game.
He did.
And you know what? Dobbs got better and
he got
better.
He came back and he learned his lesson.
Right.
And he fessed up to being unprofessional and letting his teammates down. He learned a lesson. That's development. That's character development.
Bear down.
Don't bear down me.
Oh, so that's not a good enough. That's not.
I don't want a hashtag.
Okay. Hashtag bear down.
Keep your hashtags. Go to TikTok.
Yeah, no, he did that.
I know.
He did a hashtag bear down, so all is forgiven.
He apologized on the team flight coming home because he had good Wi-Fi.
And he went in front of the team yesterday and apologized.
Was it a tearful apology?
We haven't gotten all the details of the apology.
I'm sure Cole Kmet will report soon.
Oh, boy. Don't pick on Cole Kmet.
I love Cole Kmet.
Cole Kmet
is great.
I tell you what, you mentioned that earlier. I think he will be the kind of guy you'll be watching on Sundays.
I do too. He's got a lot of Greg Olsen in him.
Yeah, he's got a lot of.
You know, I think he's a terrific, candid, professional representative of the Bears organization. That's what the Bears should want every player to aspire to be like when he speaks publicly. Honest, open, and he can be entertaining.
And he can be your backup long snapper.
Yes, he can.
So there's a lot there.
Yes, he can. And maybe he should have been on the field for that final Hail Mary play in the middle of everything because he's the best athlete and he could have jumped the highest and maybe caught the ball himself.
He could have hit it with his imaginary bat. Could have batted it down.
I love the celebration.
I know you do.
I'm a big Cole Kmet guy. All right.
He's good.
Let's get to the phones.
Yeah, I like him. All right. 312-644-6767. A lot of people have waited for us. Fred's in Forest Park. Hey, Fred.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. That was great. I'm on board with everything Waddle. I'm sorry, Wani was saying. But listen, if we're talking about discipline and consequences for what Tyreek Stevenson did, at what point do you guys think we start to look at the road record for Eberflus and hold him accountable? I mean, 3 wins in 3 years on the road.
Here's the thing. I think they're a different team now. I don't know that you can hold the past against them. I think some of those games they had literally no chance. But this is a weird one. They had to win that game, and they had the game won, and then they found a way to lose it. And that's gonna leave a mark, period, end of story. If they don't win this week, now you're stacking losses.
Then you have learned how to lose again.
Yep.
You've relearned how to lose. I don't hold against Matt Eberflus anything that happened really in 2022. I think that was a season orchestrated to lose games. Last year, a little bit more accountability. This year, it's kind of with an asterisk, this statistic, because they did go to London. It was technically a home game, but they did go to London and win away from Soldier Field.
Neutral site,
home game. Okay.
It's neutral. It's neutral.
So this statistic that they haven't won on a Sunday on the road since 2021 is very damning. Very, very damning to the organization.
And that includes like Nagy, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. He was still here for some of that.
Yeah.
Because that was the last we saw of Matt Nagy.
22, 23, 24.
Yep. Third season. By the third season,
I figured it out.
By the third season, you should be better on the road, but you also should be avoiding the kind of mistakes we saw Sunday in game. You should be a better in game coach than Matt Eberflus has proven to be.
And you know, maybe you can get away with those mistakes when you are at home, but you know, they didn't improve at all in terms of the pre snap penalties, in terms of, you know, their third down problem in the first quarter. We mentioned it. Third and 20, not going to fly. Third and 10.
The Bears do not exhibit traits that identify them as a well-coached team.
Oh.
And that is indicting midway through Matt Eberflus's third season. If there's anything that you take away from big picture, and you don't want to criticize specific things because there's always an explanation and an excuse for everything. But big picture, this is not a well-coached team. It does not appear to be that way.
It was interesting because when Dave was talking to us and giving us examples of how he would oversee us as his defensive and offensive coordinators, the problem is that Flusie is his own defensive coordinator. So he's doing his job. Now, plenty of coaches can call plays and still do oversight of their entire team. But I think when I think about Matt Eberflus and how he is as a coach, I think he's a really good – I think they did a hell of a job in Washington holding them to field goals. That's what kept them in the game. And Washington, by failing to score touchdowns, allowed the Bears to take the lead in the final 30 seconds.
I really believe
– He did a great job.
That's a great point, Molly. But I really believe – and maybe this is recency bias. Maybe I'm a prisoner of the moment.
Yeah.
But I think that what you say about the defense is true. But – when you talk about the problems with the inability to veto the third down handoff to a backup offensive lineman, when you talk about the decisions that are in game that aren't the failure to review a play, perhaps Matt Eberflus being a good defensive coordinator is affecting his ability to be a good head coach.
Yeah.
And so when I say they're not well coached, I'm saying big picture wise, it's a well coached defense.
Yes.
They have great talent and they're able to respond to challenges. But overall, because of that, I think it limits his ability to be as good of a head coach as he could possibly be.
I think the defensive players respect Matt Eberflus. I don't know about the offensive players respecting Shane Waldron.
That's totally valid. Why would you? I mean, you have two losses this year that you could point to his recklessness. And that's what it was. Trying to be too cute is a reckless behavior by an offensive coordinator. You're calling the wrong play to try to prove something you dreamed up with your buddies. Who knows where they came from? Speed option against the Colts, the handoff on Sunday, both bad
and
calls.
Therefore, ergo, I'm not sure they trust the head coach.
Ergo, we go.
Where air goes, we go.
I think you're right, Molly. Because look, you need If you're a successful head coach, if you're Mike Tomlin, if you're John Harbaugh, if you're Sean McVay, guys that we point to as good examples, I think that you have, I don't know if you're ever going to have 53 guys looking at you and nodding their heads and believing in you, but you're going to have darn close to 90% of the people in that locker room. And I'm not sure that Matt Eberflus has the offense's trust and belief or confidence. And maybe defensively, it's easier for them to see things that they identify with and believe in. But I think that you have a locker room that's divided.
And I think whether it's, you know, Parcells, Ditka, Belichick, I think those were coaches always respected, not always loved.
I think if you try to be loved as a coach, it's a fool's errand. You're not always going to be...
You're not their friend.
You're always going to be...
You're their coach.
Failing at that, at some part of your job, you're not their friend. And you're not there to comfort them. You're there to coach them. And so in that vein, you've got to do the right thing and the hard thing with Tyrique Stevenson. You've got to send a message you are going to be the guy that maybe players don't like, but they respect.
I was trying to soft sell it with a don't start him, but you know what? Sit him. Let's try Jeff. Jeff's on the Odyssey app. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Let me preface what I'm about to say with, I don't know, I would probably sit him more than I would scratch him, just because if you lose because he's not there, you're punishing the team, and we're shooting for a playoff, but I can go either way on it. I can see both sides. But why I called was there was a gaffe in a game that happened at the end of regulation 2 years ago tomorrow that cost a team a victory, and it's a tale of redemption that Tyrique Stevenson can learn from. Do you remember that gaffe?
What was it?
DJ Moore removed his helmet after scoring a game-tying touchdown at the end of regulation, costing his team 15 yards on the extra point, which they missed, and then their team lost in overtime. The reason I bring it up is the character of DJ Moore and his work ethic made us forget all about that. It was nothing that defined his career, and he's someone that can speak to Tyrique Stevenson as part of the leadership council and say, look it, young man, look what I did. I made a mistake. I didn't let it define what I did as my NFL career. And you can learn from this and be a better player because of it. And that's just something I thought of. But yeah, I'll listen
Thanks,
to you
Jeff.
Guys.
That's great, buddy. Thank you.
It's a good memory. It's a good example. I need to think about this. I don't see as tight of a parallel or much of a parallel as he might suggest. I don't know.
I mean, listen, this guy had his back to them. How did no one see that he wasn't in
position? DJ Moore did not make a conscious decision to take himself out of the play before as it was ongoing.
He wasn't too busy yapping at the crowd.
That's where I think is a little bit of a difference.
It's totally different. 312-644-6767. Going to get back to your calls. But next, we've got our guy Mike Florio. We'll talk to Mike from Pro Football Talk. We'll do that next. Mullion on the Score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day!
Day by day!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
So we can't beat, beat!
We can't beat, beat!
Boom, beat, beat!
What's happening? Gator!
NFL insider Mike Florio with Mullion Haw on 670 The Score.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We love our opportunity to talk to Mike Florio, and he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. How are you? Everyone recovered from Sunday?
Not yet, Mike.
No, we will not recover.
Too soon.
It's going to leave a mark, and that's let me tell you something. Like I saw Tim Walz made a joke about it in Wisconsin yesterday. That's how bad things are that it's become a national laughingstock. The Bears somehow losing a game on a – and somebody texted in and said, well, that, you know, that happens all the time. You can't get upset. 6 years since a team lost in that fashion
on
a Hail Mary.
Yeah.
Hail Mary full of disgrace was what one texter said, Mike. So the prayer has been damaged by that.
I'm thinking that maybe the Bears should just go ahead and trade Tyrique Stevenson to the Commanders since he already plays for them, right? He's still got a week to make it formal. It just everything about it, that play was so bizarre. And there were two holds that weren't called.
Yep.
And, of course, nobody wants to hear about that because it disrupts the, oh, my gosh, I can't believe what I saw euphoria. But there were two holds that helped Jayden Daniels by nearly 13 seconds that he had to settle in, find a spot, set up, and throw that ball as far as he could. But, you know, there are moments where the officials keep the flags deep in their pockets, and I guess they thought, who cares? It's not like they're going to complete this anyway. And it was the most nonchalant catch of a Hail Mary I'd ever seen, too. It's like, I don't know that Noah Brown even realized immediately what he'd done. It was so wild that he was so calm, but a hell of a play, a hell of a play. And you got to have somebody deep on that, not just to try to catch the ball. But remember, once the ball's touched, the pass interference rules go off. That's why there needed to be somebody deeper than the deepest receiver. Because if there is a tip and the ball goes up, you wipe out the guy who's closest to the ball, which would have been a legal play. If Noah Brown had just been knocked on his butt once that ball was tipped up in the air, it wouldn't have been a flag.
So the Bears' loss of credibility in Matt Eberflus's as a result, Mike, has precipitated a national conversation about his job status. What do you think the future holds for Matt Eberflus?
Think about what the calendar tells us. We've got October going into November, and we know that once the regular season ends, teams will be firing coaches. It happens every year. 6, 7, 8 different vacancies every year. There were 8 last year. A full 25% of the entire league turning over in one offseason. Well, those decisions don't just get spontaneously made the day after the last game. They are planted, watered, considered in the weeks before the season ends. So when you get into November and December, that's when you get closer and closer to the point where owners start to make those decisions about what the team is going to be doing as soon as the season ends. And if you're Matt Eberflus, you don't need November to be starting with a failure of you to have your team properly disciplined, properly coached, properly ready. You know, you concede the 13 yards that made the Hail Mary possible. And then on the Hail Mary play, you don't have whoever the deepest guy was supposed to be. Some have said it was supposed to be Kevin Byard. I don't care who it was supposed to be. It's on the coaching staff that no one was deeper than the deepest guy on the Commanders. It's on the coaching staff that Tyrique Stevenson was taunting Commanders fans and really not paying attention. And then when he realized the play had started, it wasn't like he really busted his ass to get over there. He was just like, oh, well, something's going on here. I better check this out. So it's all on Eberflus. And it puts a lot of pressure on him in the coming weeks. And this is the challenge. When you have a loss like what happened on Sunday, it's on the coaching staff to make sure one loss doesn't become two. They go to Arizona to play an unexpectedly strong Cardinals team. If one loss becomes two because they can't get over that moment, then you got to start thinking, all right, what are the Bears going to do for next year? And to Cliff Kingsbury, with his performance as the Commanders offensive coordinator this year, position himself to get together with Caleb Williams in Chicago next year.
Interesting.
Mike,
not that I support that, but it's one of those obvious connect the dots conclusions to draw.
So I'm just wondering, where did you watch it? Were you at NBC? Because I would imagine, I got a buddy who texted us from an airplane, said that people started screaming on the plane. If you were in the studio, it must have gone insane.
Well, here's what happened. I was standing over by one of the producers because we were in the middle of Football Night in America, and he's got two monitors. He's got the game, and he's got the feed of the show. And then Chris Sims and Maria Taylor and Devin McCourty and Jason Garrett were standing over in front of a different monitor as the play is unfolding. They reacted, and I realized that the game I was watching on the monitor I was watching was about a second behind. So I knew that that ball got caught before the ball was even thrown as far as I was seeing it, but I just didn't know what it was going to look like. So it was just kind of a weird moment in time where, oh, wait, this ball is – something's happened here because they're yelling over there. So it was just a weird – it's one of those, you know, it gets wired in your brain. I'll never forget it. It's one of those rare moments in sports that you'll never forget, but that strange time lag made it even weirder.
Mike, is Dan Quinn the midseason coach of the year?
You know, they shouldn't call it Coach of the Year. They should call it Biggest Surprise, because that's really what it is. We have our preseason expectations for where teams are going to be. It's just kind of a consensus vibe as to where they all stack up. And for the team that surprises us the most in a good way, the head coach is Coach of the Year. I don't know that it's a reflection of coaching skill. There's a lot of things that go into getting that surprise to happen. So what's the biggest surprise so far? Steelers and Mike Tomlin, Commanders and Dan Quinn, Vikings to a certain extent, and Kevin O'Connell, although they've cooled off a little bit. But that's why the truly great coaches never get considered for Coach of the Year. We just expect it. Dan Campbell, we expect it. Bill Belichick, we expected it. Andy Reid, we expect it. Matt LaFleur has never gotten seriously considered because we've just expected it. It's the most unexpected overachievement. And so it's either Tomlin or Quinn at this point. And I think Tomlin's body of work would probably get him the edge in how he's managed the quarterback decision. He was Lone Ranger when he went from Justin Fields to Russell Wilson, which implies he's the only one in the building that wanted to do this. And he went against the grain of everyone. And it's paying off. If they can keep winning, and if they win that division, a much tougher division, I think, than the NFC East, I'd give my vote to Tomlin over Quinn. But we still have more than half the season to go.
Great stuff, Mike. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
Jared Payton next on The Score.